Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, we're back. We are back here on the show. Of course, out in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Tiki and Tierney hitting it on the road, bringing the Final Four to you. And we're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience here. Boy, I tell you, Leitner's an interesting cat. He really is. We got Patrick Ewing coming up next hour, inbounds, out of bounds in a moment. Tiki and Tierney also brought to you by Gatorade Zero. Athletes everywhere are talking about Gatorade's newest addition to their roster. It's called Gatorade Zero. Gatorade Zero has all the electrolytes of Gatorade, but with zero sugar, so you have zero excuses not to get yours today. On Twitter at Tiki and Tierney, obviously flying through, 1 hour's already there. We got Lon Kruger coming up next hour as well. And Kyle Rudolph, tight end for the Vikings. We are in Minnesota. Get his thoughts on Kirk Cousins' first year with the Vikes and obviously trying to improve upon that. A little disappointing from Kirk's point of view, but we get a little football, obviously a lot of college hoops. And right now, we roll right into inbounds, out of bounds. Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right, what's wrong, and who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
Okay, here we go. So, while we saw some leaked pictures earlier in the week of the Jets' new uniforms, the team officially unveiled their new ones last night in a fashion show setting with stars like Sam Darnold, Leonard Williams, Jamal Adams showing off the new digs. Now, the update received mixed reviews, though the new stealth black look got very positive feedback, and Adams explained why the players like them.
My favorite uniform would have to be the white tops with the green bottoms. I love the black ones, don't get me wrong. I love the green, I love them all, but my favorite would have to be the white tops with the green bottom.
Okay, so there's Adams, who is just, he's a superstar in the making, by the way. Get a little pass rush. People are going to really know about Jamal Adams if you already don't. And you should if you watch football. In or out, the Jets' new uniforms are a good, fresh look for a young, rising team.
Out of bounds. Maybe I'm hating because I'm a Giant. But gee, the helmets, the all green drove me crazy. It just doesn't look good. It's just like it's trying too hard to be green. I know they're, what is it, mean, like green,
Kermit?
The green.
Yeah, exactly, right? You Kermit the Frog over here?
I'm glad that they did something new. They freshened it up a little bit. Yeah, I can give you that, but I just don't love the look. It looks a little bit too much.
Okay.
I do like the white jerseys, though.
I hear you.
So out of bounds.
You and I were critiquing, I saw them last night, obviously. You and I were critiquing them at breakfast a little bit today. And our main source of consternation were the helmets.
Yeah.
I'm going to say inbounds, though, for this reason. Number one, there are certain teams that need to escape their tortured past. Mm. And sometimes just the symbolism behind it, roll out the fresh duds and boom, we'll start over. And the Jets are on that list. You know, the Giants have tweaked their uniforms in the past. The Cardinals have tweaked them in the past. The Browns have tweaked them in the past. The Titans have tweaked them in the past. I don't love them. But of the three, I like two of the three. I guess what I'm most disappointed is the Jets had, especially being in New York and, you know, some great young players. And, you know, you think that they're really saying, hey, Le'Veon. By the way, where was Le'Veon Bell last night?
Know, yeah.
Why was Le'Veon Bell not at the fashion show?
Because he was rapping.
He was rapping.
He rented out
the studio, little studio session.
He's putting out music videos asking people if it was trash or fire.
I saw that.
Keenan Allen said, bro, it's trash.
That's what he said. Hopefully they're boys. Otherwise, he just dissed them. I don't love them. I don't. But I love the concept, the premise behind, you know, trying to move on and change the identity. They're not terrible, not as much as Twitter's framed them to be. They're certainly not terrible. They're not great. They're not dope. Little missed opportunity, but all in all, not bad.
Yeah, there was a Nike prototype 10
that
years
I showed
ago.
You. Remember that?
BT showed me.
Oh.
It was black instead of green, the helmet. That was badass.
Yes, that was dope. Are you in or are you out? But, of course, they didn't do that.
No.
All right, Teague, for the second time in a week, a pitcher was pulled in the seventh inning of a no-hit bid. Started with O's David Hess on Monday, and again last night, as Indian skipper Terry Francona pulled Trevor Bauer after 117 pitches. Now, after the game, Tito said it wasn't an easy decision.
I didn't want to take him out. And he said he knew it was the right thing. I told him I hate it, and he goes, I hate it too, but I know it's the right thing. I care too much about him and this organization to hurt somebody.
Okay, there you go. So here's the question for you guys. Inbounds, out of bounds, pulling pitchers from a no-hit bid is only acceptable in their first couple of starts as they are building up arm strength.
Out of bounds, man. You shouldn't pull pitchers. If they want to go, let them go. If they feel good and they're at 105 pitches and they got a couple more innings, let them go. Right? Until they tell you they feel tired, keep them in there. I hear you. I understand. It's only acceptable in the first couple of starts. So you're gonna now pull them. It's now okay to pull them later in the season when they're the attrition of the year has started to catch up to them. Out of bounds.
You know, I disagree. Let me make sure I have the wording right, though. Pulling, because it's a little confusing. Pulling pitchers from a no-hit bid is only acceptable in their first few starts they build up. No. I believe that there are other circumstances, like the weather, like, you know, where you are in the season, like one's arm history. Johan Santana, the Mets had been chasing a franchise no-hitter. Tom Seaver never had one. Nolan Ryan never had one. Dwight Gooden never had one. None of those guys ever had any. David Cohn, almost never had one with the Mets. Johan Santana did, and I believe that in allowing him to pursue that, to get that zero out of the column for the Mets, I believe they really ruined his career. I do. And his,
well, how could one outing ruin your career?
I mean, it's hard to prove directly to one outing 100%, but you connect the dots and, you know, you just see that sometimes you're just not the same guy. And Johan, it's pretty obvious. You know, listen, if you're a young pitcher, we talk about the incremental buildup here. To me, this is easy. And you also have to think about it this way, too. You have to look at the monetary value of some of these guys, man. If they're making $20, $25, $30 million a year and it's May 9th, and they're on the road, and it's 52 degrees and a little damp and dank out there. I'm not messing around. I know it's not old school, and I typically go old school, but I understand the fragility of the arm. I'm going to say out of bounds.
Are you in or are you out?
Anytime I can squeeze in the word fragility. All right, Teague, on Wednesday night when the Astros took on the Rangers, Houston skipper A.J. Hinch, who we used to have on the show quite a bit until he became a big deal and stopped returning calls, was tossed for arguing balls. And remember, you'd come on when he was a no-name, and then also the Astros win a championship. A.J. Hinch, nowhere to be found. We didn't forget that, Skip. We're going to have to put the anti-Teague in tier.
The hex.
The hex. We got the mojo. Might have to hex you out a little bit. He was tossed for arguing balls and strikes by home plate skipper Ron Culpa. Hinch understood why he was thrown out, but was upset with what Culpa said when they were arguing.
When you ran out, Ron told you, I can do whatever I want, I can do whatever I want. What were you displeased that he was doing?
That's what he said. Yeah, that's what he said. That's apparently what he meant. So, I mean, he's in charge, you know, and obviously it gets, you make a scene, I guess, so everybody has to pay attention, but we'll let the league sort it out.
Okay, so there you go. Here's the question. Major League Baseball umpires have become too aggressive with players and managers. Is that in or out?
Out of bounds again. No, they do their job. When you get out and start screaming about things that you actually can't change, and you do it aggressively, and sometimes, I guess, too loud or for too long, of course they have the right to throw you out. They're not becoming aggressive. They're trying to keep order. They're trying to move the game along. They call a low strike, so be it. It's a low strike.
They're so sensitive, these umpires.
Talk
about rabbit ears from a player's point of view.
Sometimes these managers want to get thrown out.
No, that's true. No, I hear you. I don't know that that applies to this situation. You know, here's the thing. It's not just Major League Baseball umpires becoming too aggressive. It's every official. Although I do think NFL reps are actually show great restraint.
I agree.
Maybe because the guys that they're being arguing with are 125 pounds heavier, and they snap them in half, and they're all, you know, hopped up and ready to destroy somebody as heat-seeking missiles. But I do you see this in the NBA, and I can't stand it. And you do see this with baseball. A young umpire, you know, you hit a little chirping from the dugout, and I know that you literally cannot question balls and strikes. That is means to be thrown out. It's in the rule book. I get that. But when they so, like, they'll rip off their face mask and they'll look in the dugout and they'll peer in there aggressively, like, they are trying to incite something, and that bothers me. No one's there to see you. We don't care what you look like. We don't care how theatrical you are, you know, when you raise your fist or punch somebody out. Just call the right play. Pardon me. Call the right calls. You know, do a good job behind the plate or on the bases and shut your mouth. I mean, it's really not that hard of a model to follow. I mean, just shut your mouth. I mean, the other thing, too, is it's taken away some of the the old school energy. You know,
I agree with that.
And I know that you always enjoy that because you've referenced that.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of it. It's like the theater of Major League Baseball was the arguing, was the screaming at the umpire. Even if you knew it was going nowhere, it's not going to change the call.
Yeah.
This is even before replay.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So there was no recourse. Like, you couldn't do anything. And the fact that they did get replay made it, like, sterile to argue. It's like, let's just go look at the replay. I don't have to scream at the guy behind the plate. Let me go look at the replay. Okay, yeah, that was a home run or whatever it may have been.
Uh-huh.
It just, like, you lose a little bit of that
spontaneity.
Yeah.
Combustibility.
Yeah, that combustibility. That's the best word for it.
Well, you know what
happens? It used to be interesting and exciting on Major League Baseball diamonds. It's gone.
You know what never happens, and for a lot of the reasons that Tiki just chronicled, that he's right, but one of the things that has gone away is, like, once an umpire gets tossed, back in the day, they get their money's worth. A manager gets thrown out, they get their money's worth.
Yeah.
They would take a base, they would throw bats, they would throw rosin bags, they would throw hats, and they would kick dirt on people. You never see that, and I kind of miss that.
I agree.
Tune in next time for another edition of Inbounds or Out of Bounds with Tiki and Tierney.
D-Cell, little early on the button there, so I'm going to have to read this without the music, without the usual part, because it pertains to Tiki's Cavaliers. I'm not sure why the segment ended there early. Santa, what'd you do wrong? That's not Santa's fault. I'm just kidding. All right, so while Tiki's... This sounds weird doing it right now,
yeah,
right?
Agreed.
But I got to do it. Tiki's Cavs, prepare for tomorrow's game against the...
It's an interesting story, though.
It totally is. Junior guard Kyle Guy is also coordinating his July wedding plans. However, Guy told reporters yesterday that the NCAA was making him take down, you ready for this, his wedding registry for fears of possible, improper benefits.
That was crazy to me that's illegal, because that's what a registry's for.
I've never heard of that.
NCAA said it was illegal, so I'm not going to argue with it right now. I'm going to try to win a national championship, and then we'll open that book.
Then I'll argue with him, and then maybe I'll sue him. All right, so NCAA President Mark Emmert refuted the report, saying, quote, and refuted it aggressively, unless the rules are about paying players, and unless that changes, the NCAA would be justified, I skipped over the wrong sentence. Nobody in the NCAA, this is Mark Emmert, my bad, nobody in the NCAA said anything of that sort. That's simply an inaccurate story, end quote. There you go. So, unless the rules about paying players has changed, the NCAA would be justified to prohibit wedding registries
due to the
dangers of boosters funneling payments to players.
Yeah, but then guys are just going to have to, like, flippantly go get married and, you know, start set up registries, which you can set up a registry, by the way, without having to get married. You can set up a registry just because you want to populate your house with somebody and say, don't buy me birthday gifts. You know, go look at my registry.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't have to be necessarily be a wedding registry.
You're also a little tacky to ask for that.
I agree, but I hear you. Of course.
You actually can do it.
You can. But I think this might be more Virginia compliance, asking someone at the NCAA, obviously not Mark Emmert, but maybe someone, hey, can Kyle Guy do this? And Virginia compliance likely checked with somebody, and they said it might be dancing near the rule, the improper benefit, so let's just take it down just to be safe. And so it's hard to like get emotional about this, because I think it's probably something lost in translation.
I hope so.
But, you know, you can't force a guy to take down his wedding registry. Come on.
I mean, that's ridiculous. I really doubt Kyle Guy is trying to cut any corners and do anything illegal. I don't think that's even close to the case.
No.
Now, maybe other players from other schools, and maybe it opens a can of worms and you want to protect again. Whatever. That's incredibly petty. But even though I believe he's butchered a million things, be fair to Emmert here. I mean, that statement is a pretty as strong a refute as you could get. And, you know, sometimes you got to take people at their word. Sometimes stories get twisted, and maybe Mark Emmert is authentic in his response. We'll see. Be fair to him. All right, coming up next, Teak, will be a little football for you. We're in Minnesota, and the Vikings didn't exactly do what most people thought they would do last year. Kirk Cousins, the $90-plus million, and the team basically a couple of plays away from the Super Bowl the year before. It didn't go forward. It went a little backwards. Their tight end, Kyle Rudolph, going to join us coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Tiki and Tierney live at the Final Four in Minneapolis, exclusively on CBS Sports Radio.
Yep, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Great news. Quick way to save money, switch to GEICO, geico.com, and 15 minutes later, save 15% or more on car insurance. So the city and the excitement and the pageantry is starting to build. Downtown Minneapolis is slowly hitting a little momentum. The crescendo building, of course, tomorrow night. National semifinals, and then Monday night. But we're going to step away from that just a little bit here, do a little football. We are in Minnesota, home of the Vikings. Stadium is beautiful. And we're joined by their tight end, who's been on the show before, Kyle Rudolph. Kyle, Tiki and Tierney, welcome back to the show. How you been?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, we're surprised you're not down here taking in the festivities. Do you live here in the offseason?
I'm excited. You know, obviously having the Final Four up here in Minneapolis. It's incredible having, you know, the last four remaining in March Madness, but also the other festivities that surround it. You know, we had the college slam dunking three-point contest last night. I just left the high school slam dunking three-point contest out at East Ridge High School with the top 25 players in high school basketball. It's a lot of fun. You know, inside of me, there's a basketball player at heart, so this weekend is a really good time.
Nice. Did you ever play, Kyle? High school?
I played a little bit, you could say.
Yeah.
What does that mean? He was all state? That's probably what it means, right? All state, 18 points a game, eight rebounds.
I was set my freshman and sophomore year that I was going to go play basketball in college. It was all I wanted to do. And then I blame Coach Trussell at Ohio State. He sat me down in between my sophomore and junior year and told me that I should think about this football thing, that it might work out for me. And obviously, back then, the recruiting process was different. Football recruiting didn't start until your junior year, whereas basketball recruiting could happen much earlier. So once the football recruiting process started, that kind of made my decision for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I think it was the right decision now. 8 years or in the NFL and a couple Pro Bowls, and you're one of the great tight ends in the game right now. But let's talk about last season. I think it's probably a disappointment, especially considering where the heights that you got to the season before. What do you think went wrong or wasn't as congruent with the season? Obviously, the quarterback change is something people will talk about. But from your perspective, being inside that locker room, what was different?
Well, obviously, when, you know, you go to an NFC championship game and then you come in and, you know, we got Dalvin back healthy, paid Kirk a lot of money to come over in free agency, expectations are going to be even higher. And we didn't meet those expectations. And a lot of that blame gets placed upon Kirk because he's the quarterback and he's the one making all the money. But that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, for us as a football team, I think, you know, we talked during the season and I told you guys how, you know, we just hadn't put a complete game together. Offense would play well, defense might not play as well, or special teams might not be up to par. Offense and defense play well. We never played that complete game. And it just seemed like, you know, the year before we started to put it together and we rattled off 10 straight wins. And last year it was like we could never get over the hump. You know, one phase would play well, and then another phase would slack off. And, you know, towards the end of the year, our defense was playing great football. And offensively, we didn't put it together. We weren't scoring enough points to help our team win games. And you have to have all three phases playing at a high level if you want to win in this league.
There's no question. We're talking to Kyle Rudolph, tight end for the Vikings. And, you know, Kyle, suddenly you look at the NFC North here, and the Bears, really, since you entered the NFL for the most part, had been, you know, quite down. They had 12 wins a year ago. Obviously, when Aaron Rodgers plays, I mean, they're as big of a threat as anybody. I know he's been a little bit banged up at the Packers or the Packers when they have Rodgers. Detroit's always a little tricky because they have a pretty good quarterback as well. It just seems like the NFC North has gone from, well, a little top-heavy to all of a sudden top to bottom, incredibly competitive. And that, you know, that's another challenge for you guys. Do you feel like maybe going back to last year before Kirk even came with Case, do you feel like maybe in hindsight a real great opportunity was missed by you guys? Do you think about that?
Oh, no question. I mean, when you're one game away from the Super Bowl, that doesn't happen very often. You know, I think as someone that's been around this league for a little while and have reached my first NFC Championship game in year seven, you know, you realize that those opportunities don't happen all the time. And, you know, it was hard for a while thinking about the opportunity that we missed. But with that being said, we've been fortunate. You know, our front office, Rick Spielman, Rob Brzezinski, have done an unbelievable job, for the most part, keeping the core of our team together. And, you know, we got a chance to bounce back this year. And I think the culture in our locker room is what will help us prevail and get back to where we were a year ago.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what should happen and needs to happen. And I think back to last season, it was that – that Buffalo Bills game, that it shocked us. You know what I mean? It was like, absolutely, what's going on with the Vikings? And why am I forgetting his name? Everson Griffin had that incident right before that game. Was that an effect on you guys? Because that's how we positioned it, just from afar. It was kind of shocking. It was like, what the heck is going on with his health and his, you know, who he's becoming? How did that affect you guys? Because that loss was, I think, shocking for us in a sense.
Well, no question. You know, I think more than, you know, a lot of times it gets pegged as being a distraction in the locker room. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily go that route. But the biggest thing was, you know, we missed Everson for 5 or 6 weeks during the season. And, you know, he's a 3-time Pro Bowler and arguably one of the best pass rushers in our league. So
that's right.
When you don't have a guy like that on the field, you know, you look at the next week we went out to L.A. and they scored 38 points and put up over 500 yards on us. I'd like to have, you know, Everson in that situation, because I think things would have been a little different. So I think we definitely missed him on the field. But, you know, we had guys that stepped up and got valuable time. That's going to help us next year as well.
You know, Kyle, the city of Minnesota, it's funny, because, you know, back in the day, certainly the North Stars, you go back that far. The Twins, we talked a little Twins baseball yesterday, and some names I know that you've heard and are familiar with: Rod Carew, Oliva, the great Kirby Puckett, Kent Herbeck. I mean, baseball's got a great deep lineage here. The Vikings made 4 Super Bowls in the 70s, but, you know, never won it. What would it mean? You know, can you verbalize? You've been here long enough to really know this fan base as well as anybody. What would it mean for the Vikings to actually win the Super Bowl?
Oh, it'd be incredible. You know, everybody talks about this is the state of hockey, and you mentioned the great history and tradition that the Twins have with all the Hall of Famers and World Series that they have. But, you know, this town, this state, this fan base is starving for a Super Bowl. You know, obviously the 4 Super Bowl losses in the 70s are heartbreaking. The many NFC Championship game losses since, it's just a fan base that's really starving for a championship. And, you know, we really got a taste of that when we made our run in 17 and got to the NFC Championship game. You felt like you were playing not only for yourself and for that 2017 Minnesota Vikings team, but for every player, every fan, every coach that had been in that organization. They were right along with us on that run.
Yeah, no, you could feel it, and it was a fun one. And we talked about some of the player changes, and Kurt was the one that we talked about most. But you also changed coaches. Pat Shurmur, your offensive coordinator, left. He became the head coach of the Giants. Flip took over, who I know because he was at the Giants when I was there. But year two of this new offensive regime with Flip and Kurt at the helm, how does it change? How does it get better? You know, how do you elevate yourself to that place that you were at in 2017?
Well, I think the biggest thing that we have to do is getting back to what we've done here historically that's made us successful on offense. And, you know, that's running the football, taking advantage of play action, being fundamentally sound in the different parts of situational football, whether it's third down, red zone. But then, you know, we get the game close in the fourth quarter and we execute. We get a stop when we need one, or we get a score when we need one. We didn't do that last year. We were middle of the road in red zone. We were middle of the road on third downs. You know, we didn't get critical stops when we needed them. And so that's the result. That's the difference of going 13-3 and 8-7-1.
It is a very, very thin margin for error in the NFL. Razor thin, man. I mean, you guys put the work in, you know, from the OTAs, pumping weight, doing the shuttles, keeping your bodies right, free agency, draft, all the things that happen. And then one misread or one failure to pick up a blitz or one drop pass, one wacky play, it's fragile. So we know what you guys go through. Tiki lived it. I watch it as a fan, and looking forward to seeing the Vikings gear up for another season. As I said before, the division's going to be very, very good. It's only getting better, but it's fun. So thanks for hopping back on, Kyle. Good to catch back up with you. Thank you very much.
Hi, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Be good, Kyle.
All right. There you go. That was good stuff right there. Kyle Rudolph, former Notre Dame Golden Domer, Vikings tight end. Coming up next, get back to the college hoops, Lon Kruger, the Sooners head coach. I thought they were supposed to be bad this year, at least a big step back after Trae Young left, right? Well, Oklahoma was pretty good. We'll get with their coach coming up next. Back to Minneapolis, Minnesota in a moment. Patrick Ewing in the third hour, head coach of Georgetown, NBA Hall of Basketball Hall of Famer. But right now, back to our New York City studio, Rich Ackerman. Got you covered. Update, here he is. Okay, college basketball's biggest weekend. First-timer Auburn battles Tiki's Virginia Cavaliers. And another first-timer, Wahoo-Wah. Wahoo-Wah. I'm trying to figure out what that means.
It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything, right?
It's a fish that can drink twice its weight.
Is that true?
It's a party school.
Another first-timer, Texas Tech, the Red Raiders. Coach Beard collides with Michigan State, the old grizzled legend Tom Izzo. The Final Four coverage begins Saturday at 4 Eastern 1 Pacific with the winners battling for the NCAA championship Monday night only on CBS. Patrick Ewing next hour. Christian Leitner joined us earlier, so we're just we're rolling here. Downtown Minneapolis, the Convention Center, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, Sirius XM 206. And our next guest, man, he's had a long, distinguished career. Some great spots, UNLV, Florida, of course, most recently. He's with the Sooners, got him to a Final Four a couple of years back. Head coach Lon Kruger. Coach, how are you today?
Doing well. Appreciate the opportunity.
I apologize. Tony Bennett, for our Virginia Cavaliers. Wiped you guys out. But
well, you didn't have to say wiped you guys. I mean, beat them. You can apologize.
Held you to 52 points.
Yeah, he did wipe them out.
But we appreciate you hopping on with us again, Coach. I know we had you before earlier in the NCAA tournament. And I ask you this when you first sat down. You've been coaching for 37 years now as a head coach, which you've been around the game obviously longer than that. You know, the regeneration every couple years and the new faces that come in, does that keep you young?
Oh, it does, without question, because each group, you want that to be a special experience. You want them to have memories that they can take forward for a lifetime, to talk to their kids when they get a little older. So, yeah, being around college-age kids, their enthusiasm, their energy, I think keeps us all young, relatively speaking.
Well, because you've been coaching for almost 40 years as a head coach, as Tiki just said, I wonder, and this is more about last year before we get to this year and obviously moving forward, was it a challenge for you, Coach, to let Trae Young shoot from wherever he wanted? I mean, we know he knocked out a ton, and boy, he's a better pro than I thought right away.
He was really good the first part of his rookie season, but these last 6-7 weeks, he's been phenomenal.
He's been
unbelievable. The game fits him well because he's so skilled with the ball and so fast, and the floor is a little bit more spread in the NBA, and he's been phenomenal.
But was it hard for you and obviously you knew what he was because you recruited him, but then you actually rolled out the balls on the first day of practice and you start playing games, and he had a green light, rightfully so, from really anywhere. As an old school coach, was that a challenge for you to grant him that latitude?
It was to a certain degree, and yet, you know, especially those first, November, December, early January, he was making everything. Nearly as hard then as it was later. When the defenses got a little tougher, more physical, they doubled him a little bit more. So he battled it, but didn't quite have the same success later. But great to see him doing so well now.
Yeah, were you surprised that the NBA he's taken to it? Because the narrative was, yeah, he's a great college shooter, but it's the physicality is different in the NBA. But it seemingly hasn't affected him. I don't know, he's not put on like 20 pounds or anything. He's still the same small kid. He's still young. He's only, 19 or 20 years old now. Were you surprised by his immediate success?
Yeah, Ken, I don't think anyone could have projected him to do as great as he's doing. I think people knew his skills and knew his competitiveness, knew he'd do well. But to this degree, it's hard to say that was expected because no one's done this really. And we kind of said the same thing a year ago as a freshman at Oklahoma. No one really could have projected that because it had never been done before.
That's crazy.
And he's doing a little bit of the same thing now as a rookie in the NBA.
I was going to say maybe a little Pete Maravich. I mean, not the similar style, not completely a mirror image of stylistically, but, you know, Pete would put up, 43, 44 with no three-point line back then. So, you know, the freedom to operate and the ability to just embarrass people. A little similarity there, I would imagine. I wanted to ask you, though, because your first big coaching – now, I know you started Texas Rio Grande Valley, and that was an independent back then.
Pan American back then, yeah. It was a changed name since then.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And you played point guard at Kansas State. A lot of people don't know you were a pretty good player, 12, 13 points a game. You played a lot of games, 4 years. And your first big job was at Kansas State. And then since then, you know, whether it's been Illinois, UNLV, now with Oklahoma, Florida, as I mentioned before. Like, I'm – because it was 89-90 your last year at Kansas State, that's your alma mater. I don't recall exactly how it ended, but you 4 years, four NCAA tournament appearances. Why did you leave your alma mater? Because things were going well. What happened then?
Things were great, yeah. You know, I think, you know, the truth be known, you know, probably the losses there were more difficult than the losses anywhere else, you know, because he's home a little bit deeper. You felt a little bit more ownership, a little bit more responsible. And I've never lost any sleep, you know, fortunately in what I do. But I think maybe if I had stayed there, I might have as a coach.
Because
it just hurt. The losses hurt so badly because it's your school.
It's more personal.
And, yeah, it's more personal, and you feel responsible to the fans because you know how much it means to them. But that was a long time ago, and I guess that's kind of the first time I've ever said that. But I think that was probably the real reason back then, because we love Kansas State and still do. And Bruce Weber, what a great job he's done.
Yes.
Co-champion of the Big 12 this year, and proud for Bruce. And Chris Beard, of course, shared that title with him, and deservedly so.
Yeah, you know, talk about Chris Beard, because he's here in the Final Four, and most people don't know a lot about him. His background is not storied, and it's a grind. But here he is. He's changed his narrative and Texas Tech's narrative. We think of it as a football school in a sense. Now it's become a basketball place. What do you say about Chris Beard? I mean, he's done a ridiculously good job this season.
Well, that's exactly what you say. He's he's changed the mindset, the focus. He's got an older team, but they've totally bought in. Mm-hmm. I mean, they value each possession. You know, they've really taken Coach Beard's attitude and personality to each possession, both ends of the floor, and They're great defensively. I think the best team in the country defensively, but they're also better offensively than what people think. Moretti makes shots. Mooney's making shots. Culver's a first rounder whenever he wants to be. Odiasi's a fifth year guy that Owens blocks shots. They've got good pieces around a really, really good couple players.
We're talking to Lon Kruger, head coach of Oklahoma, and he's with us here on Tiki and Tierney. You talk about defensive styles, defensive principles. Obviously, you know, going up against Coach Bennett. As Tiki so rudely rubbed it in your face. I mean, please, can you be any more disrespectful, Tiki? Let me ask you this, Coach. What's harder for, like, you've got a big game, whether it's an NCAA tournament game or, you know, a conference tournament game, whatever it might be, but it's a big game. Is it harder for you as the CEO of the program to get your team ready to defend an offensive juggernaut or to score the ball with relative ease against a great defensive team? What's harder as a head coach?
Probably harder to score. You know, defensively, you know, you can contain things a little bit more defensively than you know. When you think about Virginia against Auburn, you know, it's a lot easier for Virginia to slow Auburn down than it is for Auburn to speed Virginia up.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I think in Virginia's case, of course, they're much better offensively now than they have been in the past, and still really good defensively. But I think it's harder to get good shots against, and again, depends on your personnel,
sure,
of course. But in general, harder to get good shots against a really good defensive team than is maybe cheat defensively to stop an offensive team.
Yeah, makes sense. I think that makes sense. And look, let me jump back to Chris Beard and Texas Tech. They're taking on a Tom Izzo squad that's typical Tom Izzo. It's tough. It's gritty. Cassius Winston, their star, is not flashy in any sense of the word, but he's effective as hell. You know, how does a Texas Tech inexperienced at this stage team go up against a Michigan State team? Just to handicap it a little bit. How would you look at this matchup?
Well, I think Michigan State's going to have to make shots. And that's not necessarily a strength of theirs. So I think Winston's got to be good. He's got to be really good. And Tech can take good players out of it to a certain degree. So, and Tech won't play like an inexperienced team, even though they've not been to the Final Four. They were in the Elite Eight last year, but yet they play like a veteran team. They're an older group with their transfers just the great year they've had. They're very confident in what they're doing.
You know what I wanted to ask you, Lon? And, you know, we've had Tom Izzo on the show a ton. We love Tom, and he always treats us well. And when you do sports debate shows and the TV shows that have to frame topics, obviously, to get, you know, to generate some interest here, I think that a lot of people are maybe a little unnecessarily harsh on Izzo's record, only having the one championship, which I think is utterly ridiculous. But as one of his coaching peers, Is Tom Izzo in, you know, if you were to give us like an overview of what you and your fellow coaches, how you view him, is he on the same line as a Coach K or Roy Williams? Is he on that tier right beneath it? Like, where does he stack up against the greats coaching today? Right next to him?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, number wise, maybe, you know, Coach K and Roy got more championships, but what's Tom got? 8 Final Fours?
Yeah.
I mean, that puts you in the class with the best. You know, just when you think historically, there's not many people go to 8 Final Fours. So that in itself makes him one of the best ever. And just again, how consistently good basketball his teams play. You know, yeah. They do what they do very well, and they do it year after year.
I think one of the things that jumps out with Tom, and this is probably really the barometer of a great coach, his teams rarely, if ever, underachieve, and they overachieve a lot.
No question.
Says a lot.
Tom probably feels that about this team.
He told us
this year, because I don't know that he would have expected back in October to be playing tomorrow, but not unusual for his teams, for sure.
When you get bounced out of the tournament, how do you process that for your guys that are going to be here for the next season? So the guys on your Oklahoma squad that are going to be here next year, but then also the growth of the program. What's the messaging around getting to this stage of the NCAA tournament, especially deep into the NCAA tournament like you were?
Well, the guys that are returning, certainly you feel, you know, a moment of depression for the guys that have ended their careers, because that's a hard moment because they won't play another college game. And so you balance that with, you know, the guys that are coming back. Let's learn from this moment. Let's recall it to make it better, you know, make us better next year. So there's a little balance there, but still it's always about moving forward. It's always about, you know, preparation. It's always about learning and making progress each day.
You know, I would encourage everybody, because, you know, I forgot about Kansas State. I mean, I was doing some research for the show and looking at your resume, and different jobs, different conferences, different challenges, different pluses, different assets. When you look back in your career, by no means am I saying it's over by any stretch. You're still incredibly successful. You know, what was the spot where you look back and you say, man, I had it really good and I really enjoyed it, even if it seemed maybe a little more arduous in real time. But you've grown to appreciate it now that you've left. Is there a specific school that jumps out a little bit?
We've been extremely fortunate in that we've had really great experiences everywhere we've been. Mm-hmm. We've had great administrators. Right now, Joe Castiglione at Oklahoma is one of the best, without question, if not the best AD in the country. So, you know, the culture, you know, at places we've been has been very good. You know, we've been able to, you know, do the things that we felt like we needed to do, recruit the players that we felt fit the program. And consequently, I've had great experiences and not really any regrets anywhere along the way.
The only thing you might regret is if you didn't buy a home in Henderson, Nevada when you were coaching. Did you buy a little real estate before they started going crazy?
There was a moment there where you didn't want to be in that,
that's true.
1 or 2 year period.
You got in or you got out.
Exactly.
Before I hear you.
Exactly.
Listen, you're a legend. You're a college basketball legend. Thanks for stopping by, Lon Kruger.
Thank you, guys.
Good to see you, coach.
Give me some right there.
Yes, sir. Good to see you again. Lon Kruger with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Now, I mean, look at the resume, Tiki. He goes, he plays at Kansas State.
37 years. Man, it's a long time.
That's amazing.
It is.
He coached in the conference that no longer exists, the Big Eight.
That's right.
That's gone. Then, obviously, you go to the SEC, which is totally different. When Florida didn't quite have the basketball profile, certainly,
right,
that it has now. Then you go to the Big Ten with Illinois, who has tremendous basketball pedigree. You know, mostly whether it's somebody like Darren Williams or go back to Marcus Liberty back in the 80s. I mean, that's a name that jumped out for me. UNLV, we all know their history with Tark and Larry Johnson, et cetera. Reggie Theus before that. And then you go to Oklahoma.
Yeah, he's had a great,
are you kidding me?
He's had a great run. I mean, very rarely do you get to jump to programs. I'm not talking about like the amount of programs he's been to, but the quality of the programs he's been to. It's hard.
Well, that's what jumped out to me.
Yeah,
yeah.
Usually, you look at some of the resumes of coaches. It's like, where's that school? You know, what division is that? You know,
exactly.
What conference is that?
NAIA. What state is that in?
Exactly.
Like we were watching the game last night. Lipscomb.
He's all blue.
Lesser extent.
Exactly.
The NIT.
He's all blue bloods.
He is.
Seriously. I mean, it's amazing. His career and the success that he's had over the course of it. And even though he's older, he doesn't feel it. Like, he's got a young energy. For how long he's been around the game. 37 years,
that's a
man.
Lot of practices.
37 years.
That's a lot of suicides.
Right.
That's a lot of whistleblowing. That's a lot
You're
of 6 a.m.
Right.
workups, running stairs and workouts and running stairs and all that stuff. So really good to have Lon back on the show. He usually hops on anytime we're in town for the Final Four, which treats us well. All right, coming up next, this man has been on our show before, one of my favorites. Although, God, I hated him when he was in college, but I loved him for the next 15 years, and I always will. The great Patrick Ewing's going to stop by, and we'll get into this. And I did a sports minute on this, the whole Kevin Durant, LeBron conversation. Just something to throw a little curveball to us here, or was there something really truly behind that, or that they're playing us here? I got a thought. I'm going to run it by you. We'll get to that third hour coming up. Tiki and Tierney live from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Awesome stuff. Tiki's Virginia Cavs raring to go. He was out of practice today. Hooked up with Coach Bennett. Gave him the old Tiki and Tierney mojo. So we're back to the convention center in a second, and we'll talk about that LeBron and Durant situation. A little conversation. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.